You're listening to Comedy Central.
Coming to you from New York City, the only city in America, it's The Daily Show. Tonight, Putin's not backing down. Mountain climbing while black. And Beto O'Rourke. This is The Daily Show with Trevor Noah.
We have got a great show for you tonight. Donald Trump might want to get another lawyer. The war in Ukraine just got picked up for season two, and Dulce Sloan finds black people in the mountains. Plus, Beto O'Rourke will be joining us on the show. So let's do this, people. Let's jump straight into today's headlines. Before we get into the big stories, let's catch up on a few other things going on in the world. First up, the producers of the James Bond movies have announced that casting is officially underway for the next 007. Yes, but, they say whoever takes the role must make a 10 to 12 year commitment. Yeah, which is a bit weird. I mean, if there's one thing James Bond is not known for, it's long-term commitments. In health news, a panel appointed by the Department of Health and Human Services has formally recommended that all Americans under the age of 65 should be screened for anxiety. And I'm gonna save you some time. Yeah, everyone's goddamn anxious, all right? I'm gonna be screened. What does that even mean? If you live in America and you don't have anxiety, your ass needs a mental health screen, like a full one. And by the way, I love how they're recommending the screenings, but only for people under the age of 65. Yeah, what about the people over 65? It's basically like they're like, well, whatever you're worried about, it's gonna be over soon, so. In military news, Space Force has officially released its theme song. Here's a sample. It sucks. All right, in economic news, the Federal Reserve has raised interest rates yet again, yeah, to try and get inflation under control. And I don't know, people, after three big interest rate increases that, like, they haven't stopped inflation. Maybe it's trying to try something different, you know? Maybe we just invite inflation to a party. Yeah, and then when it gets drunk and passes out, we draw a dick on its face. It won't change anything, but it'll be funny. Ha ha, inflation. All right, let's move on to some of the biggest stories of the day, starting with the only ex-president who spends more time with his lawyers than his grandkids, Donald Jurassic Trump. Now, it turns out the former president is somehow in more legal trouble than ever. And we're gonna find out why in another installment of America's Most Tremendously Wanted. We all know that Donald Trump is already in legal trouble for January 6th, for stealing classified documents, for meddling in the vote count in Georgia, and for having an ass that just will not quit. But now, he's also in big trouble with New York's Attorney General.
We are in unprecedented territory once again. The New York Attorney General has just filed a sweeping fraud lawsuit against former President Trump, three of his adult children, and the Trump Organization. AG Letitia James says they were involved in a decade-long financial scheme that allowed Trump to falsely inflate his net worth by billions of dollars. James says the investigation uncovered some 200 examples of false valuations of Trump's assets, and she thinks this civil case will have serious criminal fallout.
The pattern of fraud and deception that was used by Mr. Trump and the Trump Organization for their own financial benefit is astounding. Claiming you have money that you do not have does not amount to the art of the deal. It's the art of the steal.
Donald Trump is in trouble now. Yeah, because when a prosecutor uses a rhyme, you're about to do time. Now, I'm not gonna lie, I'm not optimistic, but if half of what the Attorney General is saying is true, Trump is an even bigger con man than we all thought, because he's accused of lying about the value of his properties for decades, to defraud the banks into giving him better loans, right? And these are not small amounts. They're not small amounts. For instance, Mar-a-Lago was worth $75 million. And what did Trump say it was worth? $740 million. How? Because I upgraded it, folks. Yeah. Totally upgraded. I added a rec room. It's got a foosball table and everything. He also claimed that his 11,000 square foot apartment was actually 30,000 square feet, which was a lie. So this man is gonna be the first person to ever get in legal trouble for claiming his apartment is a grower, not a shower. And I've gotta say, it would be so funny if this is what takes Trump down, huh? Can you imagine, he tried to overthrow the government, but then they get him for lying about having an in-unit washer dryer. It's like, that's the thing that locks him up. And according to this lawsuit, it wasn't just Donald. Apparently, the whole family was involved in the scheme, which is pretty disappointing. I mean, I expect this from Donald Trump, you know, and also from Don Jr., and also from Ivanka, but Eric? Actually, yeah, he seems like the kind of guy who would do this. All right, let's move on to some international news. And it's about Ukraine.
We want to begin this morning with that breaking news out of Russia. Overnight, Vladimir Putin doubling down in his war against Ukraine.
Vladimir Putin is preparing for a longer and more intense war on Ukraine. In a speech carried nationally in Russia, the president said he will put up 300,000 military reservists to active duty.
Vladimir Putin's been pushed into a corner, warning the West he still has weapons of mass destruction, read that as nuclear, and he's prepared to use them. We will use all the means at our disposal to protect Russia and our people, he said. This is not a bluff.
Wow. Wow, wow, seriously, Putin? Nukes, the N-word? Not cool, man, not cool. That's America's word to use. He does sound serious, though. Huh? You heard him, you heard what he said. He said, this is not a bluff. Although, to be fair, this is not a bluff is what someone who's bluffing would say. Yeah, it wouldn't be very effective if he was like, I will nuke entire world, but I am bluffing, so don't worry. By the way, I know this is random, but I found it funny that he has the two landlines behind him in the picture. No, I mean, like, I get the one. Maybe that's for, like, the nuclear codes. But what's the other line for, right? Is he also, like, a part-time telemarketer? Just like, Mr. Andropov, I'm preparing for nuclear war, which is why life insurance is very important right now. Could I introduce you to a plan? One of the most frustrating things about this war is that the only reason it's still going on is because Vladimir Putin is trying to save face, right? He just doesn't want to be seen to be losing. And it made me wonder, do you think Putin knows how to lose? Like, do you think he knows how? Because think about it. The dude plays an annual hockey game where the Russian team lets him score 32 goals, right? He somehow wins the judo contest against professionals every year. So it actually wouldn't surprise me that he can't accept the concept that he can lose. You know, it's almost like when parents let their kids win everything. You know, when they're like, wow, Billy, you ran so fast, you win again. Then the kid grows up thinking that losing isn't a part of life, right? That's why when I raced my 4-year-old nephew last weekend, I smoked his ass. Bam! Left him in the dust. Yeah. Then I gave him a rematch, and I smoked his ass again! Woo! I mean, yes, he cried. Yes, he cried. But you know what he won't do? Invade Ukraine. Yeah. All right, finally, let's turn to the world of sports, where there's some really exciting stuff going on. In baseball, Aaron Judge is on a historic home run tear, crushing it out there. In football, the Giants won a game. But the most exciting news of all is coming out of the NBA, and it's because the king has a new crown.
And it looks like basketball icon LeBron James is trying something new. The Lakers star posted this picture on his Instagram stories, sitting in a barber's chair with no hair. For years, LeBron's hairline has been the subject of countless memes.
Okay, okay, who this, LeBron James? I love it, this is a dope look. No wonder it's making news. LeBron James, not only does he look better, this is gonna be trouble for the rest of the league. Can you imagine a more aerodynamic LeBron? He's gonna be unstoppable. 200 points, I'm calling it right now.
I'm glad LeBron did this. I'm glad, proud of him. Because his hair kept on receding further and further back. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that, but it just was, you know? Yeah, his line was so far back, Steph Curry was hitting threes from behind it. Really disrespectful, Steph. No, but for real, he looks good. I like it. Slick, still got the beard. In fact, it's so good, it's inspired me to do it too. That's right. The time has come. Thank you, LeBron. It's time for... No, I'm kidding. Calm down, I'm kidding. God blessed me. Calm down. All right, that's it for the headlines. But before we go, let's check in on traffic with our very own Roy Wood Jr., everybody!
Go.
Yo, Roy, what's happening
go,
in the traffic?
Go. Oh my God, dog, it's crazy, man. These police, they chasing some dude, he stole a party bus, man. This shit is wild. He zigzagging all out of traffic. He pulled over early and let all the strippers out. That is a gentleman. You don't see that kind of chivalry no more, dog. And I've been on this type of party bus before. That's a Chevrolet C5500. The gas mileage on that one. Seat about 14, if it's empty, they can be rolling. Yo, this chase might go another 4 hours. This is a lot.
This is wild. So, yeah. What, is that happening right now? Where's this?
No, this is from 8 months ago. I just figured this is more interesting than whatever you be wanting me to talk about.
What do you mean it's more interesting, Roy? Traffic is interesting.
Yeah, that's why I'm watching it.
This is not the traffic, Roy. People want to know what's happening on the road. Do the traffic. Why do you never want to do the traffic?
All right, you want the regular traffic?
Yeah, can we do the traffic?
All right, let's do the regular traffic. You happy now? Is that interesting?
No, I want you to tell me.
Is it interesting?
Tell me what's happening. What's
right,
going on?
Fine. I'll tell you what's happening. Look, James Bond. You said they looking for a new James Bond, right?
Yeah. They said they're gonna.
Yeah,
start
that's what I sent them a resume. We're gonna see what's happening. But, who do you like? Who do you want? Well, who do you think should be the new James Bond?
Well yeah, they're casting now, and I hope it's Idris Elba. I'm not gonna lie.
Now, I know that's your boy. No disrespect, but I just don't think that, you know, I love Idris Elba. I'm just not sure if now is the time to drop a black James Bond on white people. They real sensitive right now. White people, they sensitive right now. They lost their queen. You just can't drop a black James Bond the week after. You already saw what happened with the Little Mermaid. We did the Little Mermaid. Half a fish. We took half a fish. We almost didn't survive the week. You can't come back and take James Bond right after that. You can't do that, man. See, this is what y'all forget, bro. James Bond is the white man's dream job. It's a dream job for a white man. He travel, he drink on the job, he get to shoot people, he don't get in trouble for it, no paperwork. And he get to have a whole lot of sex, ain't had an STD yet. When last time you saw James Bond buy a condom? He ain't bought no condom. It's a dream job. So if we take that from white men, it's gonna be backlash. And I just don't know if I'm ready for the backlash that will come from getting a black James. Because if we mess with their classics, they gonna mess with our classics. That's what's gonna happen. Do you wanna lose the classics? Do you wanna lose what Ice Cube and Chris Tucker created?
What do you mean?
Huh?
What do you mean?
Do you want a White Friday? Because that's what's gonna happen. If we get a black James Bond, they get a White Friday, and I don't want that. Is that what you want? You want Mark Wahlberg riding around the hood with Timothy Chalamet, how you say his name?
Chalamet.
You know the one I'm talking about.
So what are you saying?
I'm saying that, you know, if it's already a movie, let white people have it. All right, just worry about the new stuff that's coming along. Here's the thing. We talk about diversity in film and all this shit. The secret to turning white characters black is that you got to strategically do it from the books. Then nobody notice. When you change a book character into a different race on screen, don't nobody, because people don't read books, nobody be read. Your book is still like in the New York Times bestseller. Like, how long ago did your book come? You know how many books then came out since your book? That's how much people don't read. They ain't even buy them new books. They would just rather read your book over and over again.
That makes no sense. What is your point?
How can you not follow this? I'm making perfect sense. Look, when you have white characters in a book and you flip them into black characters on screen, nobody cares. It's already been happening for decades, dog. Where? Morgan Freeman, Shawshank Redemption. In the book, that is a white character.
What?
Like, for real, I'm dead ass. Morgan Freeman's character in Shawshank Redemption was written as a white man. Same thing, Jackie Brown, the homie, Pam Grier. Yeah. Much respect to Pam Grier. The book that movie's based on was a white woman.
Wow. Oh, yeah, I didn't know.
You flip the book into the blackness. Yeah. That's how you do it. I give you one more. Uh-huh. The book Confess Fletch, you know, the Fletch movie franchise? Yes. In the new, the Confess Fletch, the new one, the cop that's investigating Fletch in the book is a white man. But who did they cast in Confess Fletch?
Who?
I'm just saying. Representation.
Did you take us on this whole journey just to promote your new movie with Jon Hamm? Is that what this whole thing was about?
Come on, dog. I would never come on this show and promote Confess Fletch currently in theaters and available on demand and after that on the Showtime Paramount Plus bundle. Why would I do that? That's disrespectful, bro. What I'm saying is that if we're trying to boil representation down to solely black faces telling white stories, but it's more than that. It's about black faces telling original stories. So just give us more of that. Like you like Idris Elba. Cool. I like Idris Elba.
Yeah.
So rather than Idris Elba playing James Bond,
okay,
what I would like to see is something in the same field. You know, you could have him with a gun and he's a smooth talker with the ladies, but he's in Harlem, right? He's in Harlem. Okay. And that's a fresh idea. And a leather jacket, too. Yeah, a leather jacket in Harlem and he's, you know, fighting crime.
You made Shaft. Yeah. That's what you made.
I did not make Shaft. I made Shaft.
You didn't come up with a new... That was Shaft.
That's not Shaft. That's a different... That, you talking about Shaft. My movie's called Shaft. It's different. You put the little thing over the A...
Where would Junior, everybody?
It's Shaft.
All right, when we come back, Dulce Sloan is going to find out what black people don't do, so don't go away. Stereotypes about what black people in America like and what they don't. But Dulce Sloan breaks down those stereotypes in our brand new segment, We Don't Do That.
She placed her hand on his throbbing member. Ooh. Oh, hello. I'm Dulce, and I'm here to take you on a journey. But first, what do these things have in common? Goat yoga, skydiving, owners matching outfits with their pets. That's right. It's stuff white people love to do. And black people don't do white people stuff, right? Wrong. I've traveled far and wide and have discovered there are pockets of black people who like to partake in such Caucasian activities. So sit down, relax, and get some damn popcorn, because this shit is crazy. Here it is, another installment of We Don't Do That. But this is good. In this segment, we're looking at mountaineers. No, not them. There we go. Meet Team Full Circle, a group of mountaineers that plan to be the first black expedition to summit Mount Everest. And they hope to inspire and recruit me into their world. Uh-oh, no. See, y'all see these nails? You got me missed. Girl, no. Expensive.
Once I finally got them off that damn wall, I asked the only question on my mind.
Why?
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 You know, realistically, I think the why is because we've all been climbing for a number of years now, and all of our past just kind of come together at this one point to say, hey, let's go to Everest, because that's the path that everybody's on.
There's only a handful of black people who have even been on the mountain. And because we're going to climb Everest and it has the name, there's no way that you can't talk about the lack of diversity.
There is a lack of representation of black people doing these things.
And for good reason. Mount Everest is Earth's highest mountain above sea level, meaning it's deadly as hell. In fact, out of the over 10,000 successful summits that have been recorded on Everest, fewer than 10 of those climbers have been black.
So what are some comments you all get when people find out you all are mountaineers?
Black people don't do that. Black people don't do snow. We don't ski. We don't do camping. It's like, oh, LOL, we don't do that. And that can become a very real self-imposed limitation.
It's until you see someone that looks like you that does it, it's we don't do those things.
They don't believe that you're mountaineers. If I go to a store to buy a piece of mountaineering equipment, sometimes people will explain to me what it is.
And I'm sure you get things explained to you a lot because you're black hilarious. And because you're a woman.
And they don't realize that I'm a vendor of a lot of climbing equipment.
Yet despite all that, they're still climbing, even knowing shit like this could happen.
It's an inhospitable place. People are not meant to live there.
Okay, I'm just glad you know that just nature was like, hey, get down.
There is less air as well. After a certain point over, you know, 24,000 feet, yes, you need oxygen.
So you have to bring your own air to outside, but that's where all the air lives.
Yes, ma'am.
What else?
Avalanches.
Okay, so just to get this straight, so avalanche, frostbite of various areas, running out of air, so fainting, dying, freezing to death.
Brain swelling.
Brain swelling? How do you know your brain is swollen?
You could go blind, you can't see.
Why are y'all doing this again? This seems like this doesn't explain to me. What's on the top of this mountain?
Best view in the world.
The joy of just digging deep and pushing yourself. That's what so much of this is about, is that journey and is the process.
It is going through that process, being transformed by it, and hopefully a hell of a lot more. Black and brown folks.
With all of your appendages.
Yeah. Still attached, yes.
Still correct. Attached. Yeah. Have you considered glamping?
People don't even know the things that they can do until they're exposed to it. Come do what we do.
But,
that is why you are here, to join us and get together to learn about what we're doing, and to climb a big mountain. Yeah.
I don't think I have to go outside. My producer just said, yes, I have to go outside. Okay, cool. So this team that's training for Everest wants me to join them on a fun little Colorado hike on a mountain outside with snow on top and very little air. All right, I think we've gone far enough. I'm gonna take a quick break.
We've only been walking 10 minutes.
You say you're all right?
Yeah, I might just need to get into some of my essentials.
You know, I'll be honest, I've never seen a sequined backpack before out here in the backcountry.
I got some essential oils, just in case, you know, you don't want to get it funky. You might, you know, meet a nice man.
A few things that she was missing. Water.
Food.
You know, the mountain's high, so I need to be high.
Layers.
That would help.
Yeah.
How much further are we going?
Not long at all, actually, just right up there.
It's been so nice meeting y'all. I'm gonna have to go back. Listen, I am so proud to know that there are black people out here that are willing to make history and take on this kind of challenge. But the only thing I'm trying to climb is Idris Elba. Turns out we can do this. Well, not me, but other people like this amazing team. And I'm gonna be celebrating them and cheering them on from inside, on my couch, and with all of my appendages. No, that's my shirt, but help me down. I'm too hot. It's too hot.
Hey,
All right, stay tuned, because when we come back, candidate for Texas Governor Beto O'Rourke will be joining me right here. You don't miss it. Governor of Texas. He's also written a new book, We've Got to Try, How the Fight for Voting Rights Makes Everything Possible. Please welcome Beto O'Rourke. Beto O'Rourke, welcome back to The Daily Show.
Thank you for having me back.
You are back on the campaign trail, this time for a different position, governor of Texas. It is it's an interesting time to be dealing with politics in Texas, because it feels like everything is happening in and around Texas. So let's jump straight into it. You know, you've run before. You came super close. You didn't take it. What do you think will be different this time and why?
It's really about where Texas is and what Texans are willing to do about it. So you mentioned all these things that are coming to a head in our state. We have the most extreme abortion ban in America. Mm-hmm. No exception for rape or incest begins at conception. Speaking of democracy and the right to vote, it is harder to cast a ballot or get on the rolls in Texas than any other state in the union. It's been 17 weeks since those 19 kids and two teachers were killed in Uvalde. Gun violence, the leading cause of death for kids and teenagers in that state. But instead of succumbing to the temptation to despair or submitting to this, Texans are rising up and they're volunteering on this campaign. They're knocking on doors. They're turning out in record numbers, and they're going to win this election in November, which is really a referendum on all these issues. Are we going to be defined by this extremism and our hatred and the way mm-hmm. that we make each other afraid of one another? Or are we going to come together and do big things together? So it's an exciting time to be doing this and a great state to be in, and we're going to win.
You know, there's no denying that you've always had a charismatic way about you. There's no denying that you've been really popular on the national stage. Unfortunately, sometimes it feels like the majority of Texas isn't exactly on the same page that you are. You know, a good example is the busing stunt that's happening right now, you know, with Greg Abbott busing people to all over the country to prove a point. You're against that. You've spoken out against it multiple times. But more than 50% of Texans go, yeah, this is the right move because it sends a message to Washington, D.C. How do you work that in your mind, the idea that you are opposed to so many Texans where they're saying, no, this is actually what we want?
I actually think that this extremism that we see in our current governor and government in Texas is reflective of the fact that we have a badly broken democracy. 7 million Texans didn't vote in the last election in 2020. 7 million who are eligible to did not. And if a majority right now thinks that busing migrants to DC or Chicago is a good idea, maybe, as you suggested, it's a reflection of the fact that our immigration system is so badly broken and people want to do something. What I propose, though, is instead of these stunts, which are so cruel and unkind, not just to those migrants, but to those of us who live in Texas, to the Border Patrol agents who we put on their backs, this entire immigration system that is so badly broken. What if instead we had, for example, a Texas-based guest worker program, or the ability to join family and not wait 20 years in line, which is the back of the line in Mexico or India or the Philippines to come to the U.S. today? What if you were trying to claim asylum, you didn't wait 6 years for your claim to be adjudicated, which is the current wait time? What if Texas led the way in rewriting our immigration laws to reflect our values, our interests, and our needs? And we say, look, you want to come to this country, you must follow our laws, but our laws will follow our values. I want Texas to lead on that.
It's admirable, you know. I think it's admirable. I think you're proposing solutions, but it seems like America is getting to a place where people are less enthused by long-term plans and more riled up by an immediate idea that seems like it will work, even if it may not. So, you know, you're out there, you're speaking to people. I know that you knock on doors and talk to people personally. So I'd love to know, have you met a person who doesn't agree with you on immigration, doesn't agree with you on these issues, and has changed their mind? And what was it that made them change their mind?
It's interesting. We were in a town called Hemp Hill in East Texas. And in that county, they literally have about 3% high-speed internet access. So huge infrastructure problems there. It's a very red Republican rural county. So half the group that comes out is Republican. You know, 20 are wearing Make America Great Again shirts and Donald Trump hats on. And this guy stands up and asks a very legitimate question. He's wearing a Trump hat. He said, "My mom immigrated to this country from Canada. And to renew her green card, we had to stand in this line every so often. She worked three jobs because my dad, who was disabled in World War II, fighting for this country, could not work. I started working when I was 14 years old. We played by the rules. We followed the law. And I don't know why, Beto, people are coming in between ports of entry right now and not following our laws." And I think his anger was legitimate. Mm-hmm. His experience was valid. And he asked a really good question. And so we talked about, you know, is busing migrants fixing this problem at all? Well, no. Is building a mile and a half of border wall, which is what Greg Abbott has done, helping anything? Well, no, I guess it's not. Well, what if we address the fact that people have legitimate reasons to want to come here to work or to join family or to seek asylum in a country that is comprised by and large of asylum seekers and refugees? And what if we in Texas, you as a Republican and I as a Democrat, actually led on this issue? And he's nodding his head and comes over at the end of the meeting, shakes my hand and says, "You know what? You might have earned my vote by coming out here to Hemp Hill and having this conversation." So it works. Dialogue works.
How do you then bring people together to solve an issue that, you know, you talk about in this book, the fight for voting rights? Where America is particularly divided right now is how the parties view the issue of voting. You have Donald Trump and the Republicans saying that the election was stolen. There were millions of illegal votes. None of this has been proven. In fact, the opposite has been proven, you know. And then at the same time, you have Republicans saying, well, if Democrats say that we should accept the elections, why don't they accept the elections? You know, after they lose, Stacey Abrams will say it wasn't legitimate. You know, how do you then break that? How do you get beyond that dialogue to even begin the conversation of having everybody vote?
It helps, for me at least, to understand that not only can we do what you just described, we've done it before against much longer odds. One of the stories that I tell in this book, We've Got to Try, is about a black doctor in El Paso, Lawrence Nixon, who never missed an election until the Democratic-controlled legislature in 1923 outlaws voting by black Texans. Nonetheless, he pays his poll tax the next year, shows up. They say, "Dr. Nixon, you know we can't let you vote." And he says, "I know you can't, but I've got to try." For the next 20 years, he fights this battle, a very lonely one, takes it to the Supreme Court, wins two signal victories there. And by 1944, he's helped to integrate elections once again in Texas and has laid the path for LBJ to work on and ultimately sign the Voting Rights Act into law in 1965. So if that guy could do it against those odds, then who are we now in Texas who have inherited his sacrifice and his service and his struggle? We can't squander it. We have to build on it and make sure that we win it back. So in our campaign, we're targeting the very voters who are themselves the targets of suppression and intimidation to bring them in and make them the margin of victory on election night. We're going to get our democracy back.
It's a very difficult mountain to climb. Wish you the best of luck. Thank you so much for joining me on the show.
Thanks for having me out.
We've got to try. It's available now. Better work, everybody. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Thank you again.
Thank you.
For real. Well, that's our show for tonight. But before we go, I wanted to remind you again that much of Puerto Rico is still without power in the wake of Hurricane Fiona. So please consider supporting Hispanic Federation. They're on the ground. They're providing emergency relief services and the essential supplies to the communities that are most affected by the storm. So if you can, please donate at the link below. The next few days are going to be essential. Until next time, stay safe out there. And remember, if you're feeling anxious about everything that's happening, relax. Putin's going to nuke our asses anyway.
Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central. And stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.